it, and there's enough of them to do it.
Yeah. You know, I remember watching an interview with Van Cliburn, and he was talking about when he was learning to play. And he said his parents, his mother, and his teacher said, well, you can go to this movie tonight, provided you do a certain amount of work and you can perform such and such a piece to our, you know, satisfaction. Well, he dawdled all day. When it came time to play, he couldn't do it. And said, well, you're not going to the movie. They're going to stay at work. They make him work till midnight. And I sent him to bed. And then 2 weeks later, he was at his last meeting, and his teacher asked him, what movie did you want to see last week? And he couldn't remember. And he said, you know, that popping song. And I just wish that I'd heard that when I was maybe 10 or 11. Because I could learn to play that horn pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember the band director one day says, you're not practicing, are you? And I thought, how does he know? I'm taking the horn home every night. And he knew. Because I just wasn't any change in my playing.
Yeah.
And so the horn just sits there now, and I don't ever touch it. And it makes me mad, because that was 7 years I worked on that in school. But it was just in school, and that's not work.
Well, look, Rick, you see, you can look at the farm experience and see it a bit more clearly. The writers so many of us, see, in the 19th century, grew up around printing offices. Now, the thing about it is that they were spent the day beat on the beat,
mm-hmm.
and then it's a typewriter knocking out copy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you say that wouldn't get them very far. No, it won't. But give them muscle.
Yeah, that's routine, I think. So.
Yeah. There's no salvation in that. But it's at least it does one thing that you have to do. that is, you've got to keep at it.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep the comedy going, you see.
Yeah.
And all jobs now are so demanding.
Yeah.
The world is, but you see, the grocery business isn't casual anymore.
No, you work 7 days a week.
And you got to keep that shelf.
It gets almost brutal. I mean, it's not, like I say, anything to do with people. It's always quota. It's always prices. It's always how much did you sell. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Because, I mean, I know I'll go and shop where I've met somebody. And I just don't want to get in a store where it's all prices. Where it's all mechanical. I just used to be that way.
Well,
but that's what they demanded.
You see, your daddy was, he just set him on fire when I mentioned him to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The casual way they go by.
Oh, he was just telling me why that's impossible. That
yeah.
just won't work.
Yeah. But he wouldn't, I owned it. It was my subject.
Mm-hmm.
But he took it over.
Yeah.
He couldn't stand to let that ride.
Yeah. Because that's not progressive.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, I don't think what they're doing is any more progressive. They may make more money, but
yeah.
it's dehumanizing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they go out on those trucks.
You know, he told me, and he keeps doing things like this, surprised me. He'll seem like he's just getting into this, getting so much business out and running by a program and getting quotas and all this. And then he was telling me one time that he had a survey done. They just came in and did this company hiring and to check the efficiency of his department. And the guy that was making the survey told him a story about this girl who was in charge of accounts, see. And all the accounts just kept up really good, and they couldn't understand it. Because anybody else kept the accounts, they'd always lose a few, you know. But she never did. And it turned out what she was doing was, whenever accounts started to drop, she'd call them on the phone and just talk to them, you know, and just say, well, we haven't heard from you in a while. She wasn't selling. She was just letting them know that she was still there and they'd like to have their business. And the business came right back. And they got mad at her for doing that because she wasn't supposed to. But then they realized if she didn't, they'd lose all that money, so they didn't say anything anymore. And he says, you know, you just got to pay attention to people. And he just gets me all confused.
Very difficult for parents and, you know, to talk to their families. Very difficult, almost impossible. You know, until they level off. I think that's the most hazardous thing. It's not as hazardous as you think. You see, the children. I can see that your view of your father is pretty well hardened without knowing your father. And very hard. God Almighty.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's hard.
You know, it's been such a shame that your 4 years, say, or 80, couldn't be at least another year, just say, all right, now discover for yourself. This is the year.
You can't have Susan like that, yeah.
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 You see, the partner got around it with the grief, well, they don't but it's a hazard that they're booby traps all along, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, if I lose 6 months in here, what'll happen to me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they put that fear in you. I mean, all the salesmen I talk to say, Rick, says you just don't know how fast time's going to go. I mean, these next 20 years, you're most productive. You got to get in there and go. And they get me scared, like I'm 22 and I'm not really moving any job. And I go, well, I'm just not going to listen to that. Because I look at them, and they're just not, they haven't moved in. They're all they're doing is making money, and they spend so much time getting their financial security. From the time they get it, they don't have any emotional security.
Well, now,
it's all gone.
Yeah. Now here's another hazard with you. Don't you know? You said it when you were here, and then I picked it up on a little note I wrote you. That you see, with your background, and your experience, everything you see. Interesting, like the cool Tegan 93, all those things. But you see, and that came out nicely. But it's clear in your mind now, after you worked on it with me, and you still haven't really seen much of it. But you see, your sensations and perceptions are so interesting to you that you can't move. You'll never use them. And you'd be just fascinated with them all the time. You don't see that.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Everything you do is interesting to you. But most of it is tranquil. That it might tell you, not leave me in a way. Well, I tell you the same thing. And I mean, you see it too. Now, let me tell you. You didn't hear this whole thing. If I wasn't so lazy, I'd get it out and let you hear about it. One of the. Nick did this. We got interested in the countryside, and in Cookie in particular, and Cookie talked about it, you better talk about that tonight. Cookie talked about his horses, but he still was neglecting them. I've seen him do it, and several others out here. He'd have, he had three or four horses out here one time, and he'd want to feed them. He had a little old box about this size. He put a gallon of feed in it and put it out there for all of them. Oh, yes, that's when he had those little ponies, see? And they had that big horse, little man, and another one or two in the middle. He just put it out there, free feeding, you might say.
Hmm.
Well, I say, cookie, you better put two of the boxes out there. Oh, no, he says. Others will get some. But they didn't. Now, you see, that's what Nick worked from. He saw that. He looked at the countryside. And almost all the countryside goes into horses. And he inquired the whole farm. That was his inquiry when he went back to the school up there.
Mm-hmm.
He went all over that place, looking at the horses, watching them take care. One place, you know, the house was up here, and they had a shed down here, and plenty of room around the house for the horse to graze, but they kept him in the shed, and mostly inside the stall, and it was so muddy in there, he couldn't go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody but a horse. And they had an acre of ground around the house. Now, that's the countryside, but that was his inquiry. Now, that's one safeguard. You got to live with it, you see, for a while. And that'll cut out a good bit, you see, direction. And it enables you to see a little bit more as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, Nick reported on that a couple of times, and it's on the tape. And I let it rest in there for a long time, so I listened to it. When I listened to the tape, I found it was a great deal richer than I realized as I listened to it. So you don't have to be a genius to do it. It's just a problem. And he went ahead with his school, right? He went to those horse shows, and I showed him. But they were little barrels.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, now, as you say, then this player, what does it do for me? This is your question. What does this do for me that will help me in whatever I do in the store or my own business or whatever, or make life, you know, make the whole thing better? Why should I do this? But as I see it, unless there is a focus. And that's what makes that an inquiry.
Yeah, it can be illegal. It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said to the guy that I thought maybe you were more aesthetic than most of the youngsters we see. Not my youngsters, but his.
Mm-hmm.
Aesthetic. You walk along, you see a sunset. Well, then you need something to you. Fly along the way, a gap of light too. And so it can divert you.
Yeah.
And it just carry you off.
Yeah.
And that's part of it.
You don't want to do anything too bad.
Yeah. It's very, very good. Just realize it.
Now, the inquiry. That's what Ratliff said. In the one thing, you see, have not mean. You can just see, that's his inquiry. He picks up all those pieces to go back to the time he was 8 years old. And sat on the fence watching the apple. The inquiry. Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with the uniforms. I don't know, Richard. A tie will get you a lot of places. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I was surprised that that little can take you somewhere. Take you in.
Now you got into that just a little bit. You saw a little of that as you went along, didn't you?
Yeah. I kept finding out things were easy. I couldn't figure out why, and then it just occurred to me because I was wearing a tie. You know, people always ask me, do you work here? I said, no. And they look at me funny, like, well, you're just kidding me. I said, no, I don't work here. I work for Colgate. I'm just working in the store, but I don't work for the store. And they go, oh. And it just made me, I was wearing that tie. So when we're in a tie, we're in a mess.
It's hard to believe it.
Yeah.
Hard to understand, realize.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is about the little black tie.
Little bow tie? Well, they're just not worn anymore. So, you know, somebody wears that. They've either worked for that store so long that they just can't change, or else they're a person that just has to have rules. They have just simply no daring on their part. Whatever you tell them to do, they'll do. You say, watch your black tie, they're going to wear it. And, anything they do in a store will never be any different than what you ask them to do.
And I grew up.
Yeah, they're just mechanical.
You run into that?
Not too often, but every once in a while. Like I say, it's usually old people. Somebody who's 45 and a bad boy, you know, they're the ones that are good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you don't find many of them.
Mm-hmm. I just think, these little things, farthest I've been, Ms. Rawlins and those ones. And I could see there how she was working the others. And, you know, working along with her. But not with the idea of going across the street or any other way to place, but just wherever you are. She had the, I don't know. You see, I just have more feeling, you see, for the life, for the world you lived in. But all I can see is some of the things that we can't hold.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the focus of our an inquiry are meant enough to you, if you could see that it made things a little more exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Then, I used to say all the time, if I could once get a student to care, really care, what this sonata meant, and what was over. And guys said the same thing about his book.
Yeah.
If they really care what's in it.
See, what I'm fighting, I've always been fighting it, so it's not what book did you read, but how many did you read.
Yeah.
It's like you said with the girl who's here at
mm-hmm.
Faye.
Yeah.
Listen to that tape, she wanted her friends there. It's more of a joy shared with the friends. It's hard to say, this is so exciting, and to think that a lot of people you know just aren't going to see it like that. It's kind of a lonely thing. And that's always been hard for me to fill.
Yeah, you just want to bring everybody. And you see,
it's
not for everybody.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing, though, to give you some position among your friends, to kind of identify yourself. And you have to realize well, you just have to be confident of yourself, even though other people don't understand. And that's, well, for young people especially, it's difficult.
Well, you see, Suzanne can see things out here that Jim isn't interested in at all.
Right.
Well,
it's hard on her, though.
It's hard on her, but...
No, she's mentioned that.
But she shouldn't try to interest Jim in that. Jim's interested in other things that are just as good.
I think it's irresistible. Unavoidable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So he may be spared some of that thing if he doesn't have to go home and convert somebody else.
Well,
yeah.
He spared it is for a while, as long as he's free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looks like we're going to put on our clothes and go to town. Well, I'll go change now.
Well, it's all simple, you see. But, you know what I find? I think that all these brainy chaps I work with, they don't even have a quiet place to sit down and read.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to do it all over there. And if they go home, they still don't have.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no place. There's just no place. You see, like I had our son.
Yeah.
There's just no place. Well, it's their own fault. I know it is. It is. They can do something about it. But they don't know to them.
Yeah. I guess that fear of being by yourself. You got to realize that if there is something, even though somebody else is there.
Yeah.
That I always study better if somebody else is around.
Yeah.
Sitting by myself is all I find.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, though, I really go into it. And I just forget, and I get into that subject. And then that would just startle me, and I would break it. And I'd be back where I started. Yeah.
And that lasted a long time.
What?
You felt that way.
Well, yeah, it's still going, you know. It's like I'm really fighting to get out of that. I'd say, you know. And I'm determined to, well, there's determination again. But, I want to get out of it if I'm going to do anything.
Well, now, the governess, I see all that in the governess. You see, she was caught by just that one object that she had seen tonight.
Mm-hmm. That hanging over you.
I see. He works it out. James works it out. You say, well, that's not the accepted version of Freud now. Other people do the same thing differently. That's all right. But the way James works it out, you see, is she has a break. It makes her nervous. And then she presses the children because she's threatened with a ghost. She presses the children up to the point, you see, where the children rebel, and you have that one scene that is just as real as you make it, except that James still makes it, gives a little story of calling the girl, makes her like Cotton Mather, you see, makes her look like a witch or something. What is it? Looks old. Well, that's not what it is. That's just the story element that he's inherited from Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
But basically it's there in that the little girl rebels against her and has a fit and calls her name and then won't see her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the governess is overwhelmed by it. She's just torn up and she falls on the ground and sobs. But and what what you get there is funny. Now, you see, Mark Twain doesn't have that. Don't you know, in the little section about the horse trading where he's imposed on? He buys his horse, it's a mean. Because the auctioneer's brother says he's a special horse. He's a Mexican plug horse, but he's still a plug. Unrideable. Well, he's been taking him to see Mark Twain. Mark Twain, it's a lark to him to be taken in.
Mm-hmm.
And now you see, if I go to Sears, and they... Fields, and they sell me a pair of shoes that are glued together, and the glue comes off first week. You see, I shut out Fields. I cuss. I'm mad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing, except I'm Freudian, and Twain's not.
Mm.
So, now you see, you don't get Freudian to the
Yeah. Yeah.
You get nervous.
You start getting violent.
And somewhere along the line, I found this out long ago. Somewhere along the line, you've got to learn where to turn loose. Let go. Go pushing.
This is Channel 107, the end of the talk with Rick on Monday at lunch, I guess it was. Monday at lunch, the 13th of September, 71. Channel 107, and the end of the visit with Rick at lunch, Monday, 13th of September, 71. Channel 107, I don't know what it is, around 400, I guess. And the end of the visit was Rick at lunch, Monday, the 13th of September, 71. Now, this is Tuesday, the 14th of September, 71. We've just worked the cows. The vet was here. We tested for pregnancy and vaccinated 5 heifers and looked at some of the others. And they made a steer out of the colt. They gelded the colt, and this is noon, it's about 11:30 right now. Just taking a little breather before we come in to talk, this Tuesday, the 14th of September, 71.
And you just sit there and watch, and one machine takes care of one thing, and the next machine takes care of the next. And they'll bake 200-300 loaves at once, pull them out, slice them, and they have them on the cooling racks. And it smells good, but it just isn't that touch on the bakery.
Living all over for my coffee. In Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Is that all you know, Miami?
About all I've been for any length of time.
Do they still have little bakeries?
Well, they have little pastry shops.
Yeah.
Same thing you've got in town here.
And they have bread, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make it up here.
Do we have some again?
Yeah, we got one down at the mall.
From where?
The mall.
Did you know that thing?
Yeah. And there's one there on University, that's Jim Danny. They bake their bread.
Yeah. They bake all kinds. Monkey bread, potato bread.
Well, why have I not known that? I just figured it's all gone.
No, there's a few. And they do a lot of specialty work now, you know, wedding cakes, things like that. bread is just kind of a sideline, I guess.
Yeah, mostly just, a pastry shop.
Just keeping it up, you know.
Yeah.
And it'll probably fade out. But you know, I was in the store when I was in Miami last week. I was working in this Cuban store. And I had one guy, and all he did all day was make Cuban bread. And he'd have these, he was out in the stock room, and he'd have these big cabinets. Wooden doors on it, and you open it up, and he's got these big long rolls of dough rising, see? And he's got himself a big oven out there, and he'd just bring them out and put them in, and bake them, pull them out, and put them in a bag, and set them on top of the oven, people come by and take them. And that bread, I guess, is about the same as their rice. You know, you always have that bread, and you always have that rice.
Well, now, yeah. Could you get some of that if you go down there?
Oh, yeah.
I
was going to buy some and take it home, so I'm trying to learn how to cook that food. I like that. I really like that food. But I just never got around to it. Those big, big, long loaves, you know, and they cut it up and slice it and make sandwiches out of it. And it's kind of a dry bread, you know. A lot of crumbs, crusty, kind of hard. That's how they like it. It's not a real solid bread. It's like full of air. Yeah, it looks like French bread, but it's not.
It doesn't taste the same.
No, it's more crusty, more dry. You know, French bread is pretty solid. You know, there's a lot of bread. This has got a lot of, you know, air pockets and stuff in it. Not as doughy.
Well, now you see, so far, I've got no categories to work on. So I just picked up the bread. Now, I'm working on that now. Your family don't have
they're
not much interest in that.
In the Cuban food, no. See, they're kind of alienated against Cubans. A lot of the older people are because, well, they do better in business than most Americans do. You know, they come over and just take over. No, they work because they'll be pulling welfare on the side, see, and they'll be making a lot of money in business too. People mad.
Yeah, I know.
Not speaking the language irritates them. It doesn't bother me. They speak Spanish. It's your language. Speak what you want. But it irritates a lot of people when I hear them speak Spanish.
Irritates the papers
and your daddy anymore? Both of them? They stand it, but they'll get mad every now and then. You know, say, well, why don't you speak our language?
Oh, you mean tell them?
Well, you know, don't tell them, but they just mumble it. You know, mumble it to me. Why don't they speak our language or something?
Mm. Yeah, why can't they stay in their own neighborhood?
Yeah.
Does your family eat like we do? Just uninteresting things?
I don't know. I don't think so. I have to pay any attention to how they think about the food.
Just turn that over there. You don't have to rattle it.
My mom will try a new dish now and then, but most of the time it's you know, you've had it before. I don't ever tell her that, though. You don't want to make her mad. I have to eat there, you know. And I don't want to cook the food. It's too easy to just go in, sit down, and eat.
Well, that's what I think. Hmm. You're not going out to dinner when you go home, are you?
No, but you gotta appreciate that she's cooking.
I appreciate that, yeah.
My cousin likes to cook. We carried some of his stuff home from Fort Worth. He had half a dozen cookbooks, specialty cookbooks, along with three or four regular kinds. He sets up an apartment and he cooks and all these special dishes, and then he has his dates over for dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He cooks. His dad is a big man in Gulf Oil, and he used to live out in Southeast Asia for a long time. And he's real
My grandmother says he's real cosmopolitan. Cindy says he's cool. He thinks that's neat. Cook for a day. Picks up a real fancy dinner.
What's fancy?
What's fancy? Well, Galpin gourmet type dishes. He'll fix dish Chinese and Korean dishes. I've never eaten over there, but it's the kind of thing that uses everything in the kitchen three or four times. And souffles and things like that. That take a lot of time. Take some skill. Once in a while, Jim and I will decide we're going to have something kind of special. But I don't much like cooking. And every time I try something new, Jim says, why don't you try something new? And I say, okay, what's new with hamburger meat? What's new with chicken? Well, chicken's okay. But the last thing we tried was kind of like a shepherd's pie, and you make it with cornmeal instead. But biscuits like. And it came out about a half inch of meat and about 4 inches of cornmeal, which when you begin to eat, it's just kind of bleh. Well, let's not try that one again.
Jim is better cook than you are.
He's pretty good. He's tried more things.
You aren't much of a cook.
I'm not interested in it. And I'm not very good at it either. When we try something new, he likes to help, like shrimp creole. That's a joint effort. When we made our pepper relish, that was a joint effort. He's in there, super awesome.
Yeah.
Making sure I do everything right.
That
would be fun. It is.
I think all that interesting food in this place. It's, just ought to eat a bit.
Bread. But you know, I was thinking I could just easily go to a bakery and buy that potato bread. But it wouldn't be the same, I don't think, as what Liv and I did. You know, just together picking out a loaf of bread that we'd like for lunch and just sitting there with Dick gone and the two girls playing someplace there by ourselves eating bread. It's not just bread, so that's good.
Am I getting any help talking? See, if it was Daisy, it would be talking.
Mm-hmm.
The way it is, I see we've stopped. She's all right, and I can pick up a cue from what she said. But here we go.
Mm-hmm. She'd say,
I got no cues. I have no cues. That's no leads.
That was a joke of the century. I hadn't been there 2 days before I knew that was a mistake. Oh gosh, yeah. Cindy was in school. She'd just gone to school. They'd driven her up there Sunday night and take all her stuff and put it in the dorm room. Well, that's when Daddy made the discovery. Then in the next wing of Cindy's building, there were girls' rooms and boys' rooms right next to each other. He also made the astounding discovery that about half the students there are Negroes. And in fact, Cindy's three suite mates are Negroes. That was occasion for another outburst. And on top of that, he got stuck in the driveway. It's a little tiny sidewalk that they let cars drive up to unload, and it has a little circle. And at one end, before you make the circle, there's a little space where you could back up into it when you're turning. Well, that was filled. Someone has parked there. So Daddy spent a half an hour trying to get out of this, back out the driveway. Well, when my father, when he gets on to a subject, it can go on for an hour at least. And, of course, he had fuel. He had the boys and girls next to each other, the blacks, visitation. He found out that boys can come up and visit in Cindy's dorm from 5 to 2 on Fridays and Saturdays. And this was terrible. And Mama said, she said, this went on the whole time. He's trying to back out of this. And it took him a half an hour. It just gets worse and worse, you know, as he waits. It's just like the doctor out here talking about the cows being fat. Now, the first one, she's pretty fat. The next one is it kept, you know, each cow, they get fatter and fatter. Worse and worse. That's what my father does. Worse and worse.
How
did that do? Oh, he started out and he said, the first cow, he said, she's too fat. She's got to lose 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next one that came up there was too fat, too. Well, this time, the young man was entering into the spirit of next time, there's too fat to go to market. I just, poor old 24 got up there. He said, now, don't you eat any McDonald's hamburgers for the next couple of weeks because she's going to market. And the young man, one of them ran up there, and he said, that was bad enough. You can get enough towel off that one to grease both pairs of shoes. Pretty soon, they had to lose 200 pounds. And I expect if he went on, it'd be about 300 that they had to lose. They're just too fat. Fat getting them in the pelvic area.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too fat. He couldn't even get his hand up there. You know, he said he couldn't get his hand up there. They're so fat. And they just got fatter and fatter. He got one.
Yeah.
He kept saying that heifer's going to have a cesarean. She doesn't lose some weight, she's going to have a cesarean. He's going to have trouble with that cow.
Thank you.
They got real tickled. I could hear it, just each cow. It's fatter and fatter.
That's as near cussing as I ever heard him. And then he got thinking about the pasture. And then he said, what you need is a palmetto.
Yeah. And he put them in a palmetto pasture.
And he said, and don't feed them a grain all winter. He looked over that hay when he was down there and he said, and give that hay away. I said, Doc, I'm not going to let you look at the horses. He says, I know what they look like already. Everything out here is too fat, he said.
I didn't hear what he said about the rod. Something about that was feeding them, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, he said, yes, they have too much feed. I said, they haven't had any feed unless they had a rye last winter. You call that feed? Yes, he said, of course, it's feed. You know, it's better than bought feed. It's better than grain. Because they can fill up on rye and grain, you know. They just get a little hand up. They got any call.
He came up to me and he said, I bet you take them from one pasture to the other.
And I, after 2 days, they got on to you?
They didn't get on to me. I found, you know, I know that. I knew that before I went, that I can do almost anything. And it's not going to bother them. Cindy says, I'm the do-gooder of the family. I'm held up as an example to the other two children. It's a terrible position.
Oh, yes.
You have a lot of fun in that position.
Anyway, no, what happened, you see, they talked about, Mom would talk about Cindy. We were alone most of the time. She'd tell me all her worries about Cindy. And Daddy'd come home and tell me all his worries about the finances, about his job, and about paying for the car repairs, and about this and about that. Cindy would get hold of me. She'd tell me all about her problems with boys, and whether about making girlfriends and about mama and daddy. The only person I didn't get a lot of problems from was my brother, and I only saw him for about 3 or 4 hours in a big crowd.
What happened? How'd you miss him?
Well, we went to Fort Worth to see my grandfather, and they came by Friday night and stayed about an hour. And Saturday, they took us sailing. And you don't do much talking when you're sailing, because I had this suspicion they were trying to get rid of
me. Because
they're pretty nice. It's one of these kind of, the boat is not real big, but it's real slick on the top, especially when it's wet. Well, when they took my mother sailing, she was sitting on what they call a box, which is right up at the front. And you don't have a strap to stick your feet under, you know, to hold yourself in. All you have is this little rope and the mast. Well, Doug turned the corner real fast, and Mama just kind of shoomp, just slid right off the boat, you know, landed on her seat and just sank. Well, it shook Doug up, and he hit the ground in himself and messed up the centerboard. You know, here was Mama. She got the giggles when she's in the water. She couldn't get back on the boat. There she was floundering around the water. Doug was scared to death. He thought he'd done it on purpose.
You want to sit up instead of back.
Anyway, so when I went down, they put these little strips of rough tape on the boat, places where you see. So you got a little more to hang on to, but not much. And we just go zipping along there. And I'd see Doug, you know, and he'd kind of watch and try to catch me when I wasn't watching, and he, you know, kind of, I about fell off once. But anyway, so that's about all I got to see him.
What's he doing?
He's working. Well, they invite us to go to Six Flags over Texas, but I thought I'd better not this time. You know, I'd just spend some time with my grandparents. So I didn't see them much.
Well, now, that sort of talk, when you're keeping up with your mama and your sister, Cindy and the daddy. Now, where did that get you?
Into bed. Well, it's kind of gloomy is what it is. Gloomy. Because, you know, this is a perfect example of what my father's like. I got in the car after they took me off the bus station. We were driving along, you know, real heavy traffic. Mama said she was so glad that Jim and I decided not to go to Georgia because she worried about me up there. Not just a degree, but lifting things, working too hard, all sorts of things. And so Daddy comes out, you know, and I could just tell what sort of conversation this was going to be by the tone of voice. He says, "I can't understand why he wants to leave Florida in the first place. Doesn't he have plenty of fishing to do there?" I said, "Daddy, Bew doesn't fish very often." So he couldn't understand why Bew would leave Florida when you have Lake Poinsett and Lake George and all the fine fishing in Florida. Nice weather. Anyway, he comes in, he says, "You know what's going to happen?" He says, "It always happens to people. They save up their money all their life, and they have this dream, and they finally buy their land and start building their house, and about the time they get the house built, they have a heart attack." You know, I just got zapped back. Oh, well. You know. Anyway, this went on for about 30 minutes about heart attacks and, you know, putting all your money into something like that and then having a heart attack, and then you're just stuck with it, and it just sits there, and everything rusts away until somebody buys it for chicken feed.
He didn't leave any of them, did he?
No. He went through the whole decline and fall. Whole family in debt.
Well.
This goes on every once in a while. Sometimes he's real cheerful. Actually, lots of times. But. everywhere in this heavy traffic with the heart attacks going on here and there.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, real heavy traffic. You see, what he does, he can drive perfectly well by himself, but when anybody else is in the car, he needs lots of help.
Yeah.
You know, like, can I get over that lane? And of course, Mama's stuck with his job of directing, and she tells me something that's perfectly clear to him, like, you can move over now. He'll move over two lanes. Well, she means you can move over into the next lane. So he goes staring over into the second lane over, and then he finds out he's not supposed to be there because that lane turns off the wrong way. I remember one trip, this happened. We were going through Houston on our way home, and Mama put him on the wrong bridge. So he stopped the car and made Mama get in the back seat, and I got in the front seat. It's my job. And I couldn't even read maps. I still can.
You still can.
Well, I can, but I don't read them very well. I just mostly go by memory. If I've been someplace.
Well, that works.
If I've been there, it does.
Mostly?
Mostly fine. Like, I could find my way over to Faith's house real easy.
Just because you've been there once.
Yeah.
But
Faith's.
Yeah.
In Houston.
You mean Faye,
Faye Burke.
Faye Burke?
Yeah.
Did you get over there?
Got over there at Christmas, but not this trip.
Oh, you didn't get to it?
No.
Oh,
we talked a long time. Did various interruptions.
On which end?
Hers. I got so tickled. She asked, she said, are you calling long distance? And I said, no, it's just a regular phone call. She said, okay, well, we can just talk this way. She said, but wait a minute, I got to get things straight here. All three children were sick with flu or something. She said they have 102 fever, and that's with medicine to keep it down. And she had them all engaged in some sort of project, you know, a little separate. I guess Patrick was asleep. I didn't hear anything out of him. Patrick is? Or Shannon.
Shannon.
And so she, I heard her off the phone a little bit. She said, now, Curtis, Elliot, Mama's going to be on the phone for a while, and I want you all just to entertain yourselves for a while. And if either one of you starts fussing, I'm going to send you to your rooms. Well, while she came back, now she got them all settled. And we talked, and every once in a while she'd have to stop and tell Curtis that he could get a sponge out of the kitchen. Tell Elliot he could wash that off himself in the bathtub. At one point, Elliot came up to her and said he wanted to go downstairs and play with the other children. And she said no. It was too hot, and he was sick. So in about two sentences later, she said, wait a minute, Suzanne. He's decided he's not going to argue about it anymore. He's just going to disobey. He was going out the door downstairs. He wasn't going to fuss anymore about it. So she went and got him back. Anyway, let's see. Mm-hmm. And one time they started fussing with each other, and she told, I think it was Curtis, that he was making the trouble, and it was going to be him that had to go to his room. And that ended the trouble real quickly.
So we all talked.
Over about a 45-minute conversation, you know, we had these little interruptions here and there. I just got so tickled.
And then she just picked it up right
back. Yeah,
right
just picked it right back up. Didn't interrupt her song.
What are you all talking about? That's what I want to say. I asked Miss Daisy, you know, she had the preacher down there every Thursday, first and second, and I said to her, almost said to her, Miss Daisy, what are you all talking about? And she won't tell me.
She said, just this and that.
Well, you know how she started? She said, okay, now, first things first, she says, how about your thesis? I said, oh, no. I said, well, my thesis. I said, that's a good question. He said, well, she said, well, what are you going to do on it? She said, I never worked with a tape that much. I said, you're lucky.
So that's the reason I'm in Texas now.
I did. Are you sure you didn't tell that? You said Faye told me you were sick, and I said, well, it wasn't quite being sick.
Thank you.
So let's see. The next thing was. Oh, she interrupted that. We talked about that a little while, and then she remembered that she wanted me to remind Faye that something about a tape recorder that Ron had given.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wants it back.
Yeah.
For Ron.
She wants it. Yeah, I know that.
These little things came in patches, kind of, you know, because I may have one interruption in the middle of it and carry on for a while, and after the next one, we'd go on to something else. But we came to the grand conclusion that I shouldn't worry about doing what I think you might want me to do. She said, "You're getting an early grave that way." I said, "I know."
You know.
Well, I don't get anything much out of this your recording. didn't you get into the governess or anything like that?
You mean her?
Yeah. Well, she's the one that taught me about the governess.
No, I thought about that. That's about kind of straight by itself. I just didn't talk about it to her.
But you'd have to transpose it a little bit.
Oh yeah. Well, it was just the fact that I tell you the reason I went down there is because I felt like I had taken a break. But what it was, more than that, was the fact that I had written Mama and told her that we thought we were going to Georgia, and we have a week or two in Cocoa. And I thought, well, while Jim was there, I'll just go on out to Texas. Well, that's when we found out that we weren't going to Georgia, and I began to realize that it wasn't really a very good idea to go right when I went because of the tapes, you know, because I figured if I broke up working on it, then it'd be harder to get back into it. But then I got this letter from my mother, and she first line, she said, "I'm so excited you're coming." And she just got, took it for granted. And I could just imagine calling her and telling her I wasn't going to come. I just couldn't do it. And even though I knew I shouldn't go and didn't have time and couldn't afford it, about 50 other million reasons, I just couldn't pick up the phone and tell her I wasn't coming. Because I've seen her face when Polly tells her that. Her mother tells her that. And it's just kind of utterly crushed.
You mean you just went out to the police,
huh? Well, yeah, in a way, that was the main reason. I mean, by the time I was getting over the sulfur and all, I was feeling pretty good, and I didn't need to go out there anymore. I didn't even feel like I wanted to then. I mean, I wanted to, but I wouldn't mind waiting quite a while. And that's when our letter came, and I just couldn't do it. Jim said, "Well, do you want to go out there?"
Well, now, that's got nothing to do with the governor.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think
it's... Wait, it does.
It's pressure. It's pressure.
Yeah.
This is exactly what you're talking about. This is what I think you need to do.
Pressure.
It was a more, in its way, a lot heavier pressure than just feeling panicky about writing a thesis. A lot more.
You mean, not just about your mama?
Yeah.
It was a kind of responsibility.
Yeah, it's just that, you see, we've always been so close, and I know that in my family, if I'm around, they just seem like they don't worry quite so much. Or at least they can talk to me about it, and once you can talk about something, it's not so bad for a while. And I know my mother's voice, and I can just imagine, you know, this old Susie, you know, just this utter sorrow in it. And I mean, I'm not exalting my position, but they just, they like to have me around. And other children, it's just, they don't see me much. So that makes it even more important that I come. I just couldn't tell I wasn't coming.
Well, other people here treat you like that?
Hmm? Well, no. I mean, I know I'm liked, but it's not quite the same. You see, the thing is with Mom and Daddy, how, you know, they're not real happy because they've got a lot of, they do worry about Cindy, and Cindy is very unfriendly toward them most of the time. Like, when we took her up to her dorm, she just kind of... You sure you want to go on with this?
I'm telling you, there's nothing like having children, is it?
No.
No, sir. No, sir. I'm telling you. Look at that. How'd you like to have that hanging around?